Hello, and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate and partner marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson, head of content over here at Awin, and thanks for joining us today. And once again, I'm on my own today, and actually this will be the last time you hear from me for a couple of months, as by the time this episode is published, I'll actually be on paternity leave. In the interim, I'll have a couple of trusty Awin colleagues keeping the hosting mic warm for me, and they'll be bringing on their own guests and have their own topics to talk about. If everything goes to plan, you should be hearing the golden tones of Lee Metters, who leads Awin's efforts in the brand partnership space in May, and he'll have an update for you on all things related to that topic and how it's evolving and growing in 2023. And you'll also get a view from the US when Sam Scherer from our US marketing team takes over the reins in June to talk to Scott Brinker, a leading figure in the MarTech space who has spent much of his life and career analyzing trends within the wider marketing technology industry. That promises to be a really fascinating interview, so no pressure there, Sam. In the meantime, though, I have my own fascinating interview candidate on today's episode. AI is the hot topic of the moment. In fact, I saw Bill Gates actually was quoted just a couple of days ago as saying that it presents the most revolutionary technology developed in decades and that businesses will have to completely reorient themselves around it. So the big question mark on every affiliate marketer's lips right now is how? Well, today's guest has a few thoughts on that. Rob Beresford is a longtime veteran of the industry, having held roles across several businesses immersed in affiliate. And now he's launched his own company built on AI. The appropriately named Affiliate AI promises to use the power of natural language machine learning to revolutionize the way that affiliate data can be instantly analyzed and turned into valuable actions. Rob joined me in the office a little earlier today to talk about what Affiliate AI is, why he developed it, the existing problems in the industry today that he feels it can help solve, as well as some wider ranging points around the general impact of AI on affiliate and the broader marketing discipline, as well as wider society as well. So let's dive straight into that conversation. Hi, Rob. Thanks for joining the podcast today and coming into the office.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Now, obviously, you've just launched Affiliate AI, which is the company that we're going to spend a bit of time talking about and finding out a bit more about. Before we get into that, AI is obviously such a hot topic on everybody's lips right now. Everyone's thinking about it, thinking about how it's going to transform their industry and business, marketing and affiliate marketing in particular. I guess just to set the scene a little bit, there's so much interesting stuff going on right now, and there's a ton of new solutions that are being built off the back of ChatGPT 3, now 4 obviously has just launched, not to mention other machine learning generative models that have been kind of released into the wild. So have you come across in your work or in just like from a hobby perspective, like exploring more about this, have you come across any personal favorites that you think are really interesting or novel kind of takes on how AI can be used?
Novel's an interesting word there. It feels... I was listening to a good podcast the other day. It feels like when the iPhone first came out and the apps were like the beer drinking app and like fart machines. Like it feels like it's all moving so quickly. Yeah. Like if you think about like the App Store and the iPhone, it took us, what, 5 years to get Google Maps, which is probably, or like Deliveroo, which is actually the killer like phone app. It feels like we're at the beer app stage. But it's moving so quickly that it's incredible. Yeah. So yesterday, OpenAI shipped their plugins. And so effectively, it's pulling from third-party APIs, which means you can, for the first time, actually do stuff with technology. Mm-hmm. And so they've got the Expedia plugin and they've got OpenTable plugin. So then you can say, here's my login to Expedia, here's my login to OpenTable. I book me a 3-week holiday in Italy with my family and kids. Here's my budget. And like, that is probably the first time that a core AI technology has like broken out of like the copy and paste walls that we found ourselves into at the moment. And so if you'd asked me this question a week ago, it would have been like, there's this cool bedtimestories.io where you can type in a bunch of characters and it'll spit out a 5-minute story for you to read to your kids. But even in a week, that feels like super, that was cutting edge 7 days ago, and it already feels super novelty.
Yeah, I mean, we're recording this, obviously, towards the end of March. This episode isn't actually due out until April. I was going to say, by the time this comes out, God knows where it'll actually be. I mean, I've come across a load of different solutions that have been launched in the last kind of month or two, I'd say. And there was a really interesting one that I came across called Colossian, which was creating kind of AI-generated avatars, but like real human kind of videography that you can then provide a script to, and then this human kind of speaks the script that you're acts out for you, essentially. And so it got me thinking about things like, you know, product marketing videos where you want to actually kind of, you know, explain what your tools are, how your software works, etc., rather than getting people into a kind of studio to kind of film that stuff necessarily. You've then got this much more like 24/7 availability of this avatar that can create that for you without the need for that intervention necessarily. And I say this all the while kind of recognizing that our podcast production studio team are here, and that's not to kind of dismiss their value at all whatsoever, but you can see the kind of like disruption that's occurring across industries like that.
And I think premium stuff will be top for a while, but I think using tools like that to split test 10 early variations before you get into the studio is kind of what like the smart money would be on now. I'd still probably want, if I was a big company and spending a bunch of money, I'd still probably want something high production to ship in the end.
Yeah.
But the ability to ship MVPs
like
on your own on a Saturday, like you don't need... I think that's some of the really exciting stuff is business ideas that you needed 20, 50, 100 people to ship a year ago.
Yeah.
You can ship with a much smaller team because of the composability that these tools are.
I wonder almost if like the impact of this stuff is going to be felt more with that early stage startup space where suddenly you've got access to technologies that can, like you say, ship an MVP of, in whichever format or form it takes. And you kind of you don't need to invest a ton of money into it. You can kind of get your crude, basic, kind of minimum viable product out there, and you can see how it works, and you can iterate off the back of that. And it's just about getting it launched into the wild and testing it.
I'd argue that it'll probably extrapolate over the lifetime of a company. There's a kind of few famous examples, like Instagram sold for $1 billion, $2 billion with a team of 10.
Yeah.
Like, I do think that'll probably be the norm in the next 5 years. You don't need 100 people engineering teams to do the same things that you did before. I think about like before we had GitHub, we'd all be writing the same code over and over again. And like, we now look back at that and think, that was so stupid. Like, I think we'll look at the things we do now in the same way in 18 months' time. I can't believe I used to do that thing.
Even like the whole concept of coding is arguably going to go through a massive transformation. I think there was somebody from one of the reps at OpenAI was talking about the fact that the coding language of the future, or the programming language of the future, is English.
It's not
code anymore you provide the input and the AI spits out what you actually need sense.
And it's that composability, right? Like it moves so quickly because you can build on other stuff. If you can get ChatGPT to write your code, then you can, and the flywheel moves so much quicker because you can do these things quickly.
Just to talk about and to give some introduction to the audience about who you are. I mean, you've worked in the industry for around 2 decades, roughly now.
Coming
I think
up to,
real industry
2005.
Veteran.
2005.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, could you give us a bit of a quick summary, bit of an outline of your career so far?
Yeah. So I started as an account manager at DGM, who I don't think exists anymore. Maybe in some corner of Australia. Yeah. Started as an account manager there. Very quickly went publisher side, and then it was me and my kind of boss, who at the time, kind of looking back on it, he was 18, 19, still at university, started an affiliate company because that's kind of what the affiliate industry was back then. And so I was the first full-time employee there. We sold that. That's now part of LogicServe, which is still part of the Awin infrastructure. Then started a group buying website. That was acquired. Then I was chief revenue officer at My Voucher Codes for a while, and then went to Button, who power most of the app tracking for affiliate marketing. I ran the fintech side of that for 5 years, left there just before Christmas. promised myself I'd take a little bit of time off and started this company 2 weeks later.
That went well then.
I know, yeah. Started this like first week of January. I gave myself a couple of days off, already got bored. I'd been kicking the tires on this kind of long-held thought that I think we've all had, that affiliate marketing sits on a lot of data and probably doesn't do enough with it. Long been interested in AI and machine learning, like from personal experience, mainly frustrated that kind of humans who are walking, talking supercomputers do a bunch of dumb stuff over and over again. That we just, driving a car is kind of always, I've talked about this to my wife a lot, like why do I point this steering wheel down the middle of a motorway for hours on end? Like, it's such a waste of human intellect. And so obviously AI's, you know, DeepMind, one of the greatest AI companies on earth, is actually my original 18-year-old boss was working at DeepMind, so I've been following that super closely. And then obviously when kind of early OpenAI stuff, effectively what happened is they started shipping it on Azure, and then AWS started doing stuff, and then Google Cloud started doing stuff. And so like 18 months ago, if you're going to launch an AI company, you'd need 15 PhDs in machine learning. But over the last 6 to 12 months, you can all of a sudden start to build things. Mm-hmm. And so started really spending time with the AWIN team and a bunch of agencies and a bunch of brands to kind of really understand the inner workings of their problems. Mm. And then working out how we can use these newfound technologies to help them solve it.
Yeah. Do you think it was like your background in affiliate, you've been so immersed in it over the course of the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years or so, that as soon as you started thinking about AI, it was almost instinctively to try to solve dilemmas in the affiliate industry?
Yeah, I think I was always going to come back to like these affiliate problems. These, like, those of us that have been doing this for a long time kind of understand a lot of these problems kind of in our bones somehow. You kind of have a natural feel for, and that's why, you know, that's why this business is interesting, I think, because the affiliate industry is so nuanced and so specific, and its problem sets are so specific. I don't think the problems will be fixed by general AI tools. Mm-hmm. I think they need a specialist affiliate brain to kind of come in and fix it.
What are those key dilemmas then? I know you talked about like the fact that the industry sits on layers of data that arguably it just doesn't make enough of. That's one of the key ones for sure. Are there other kind of key dilemmas that you see within the industry that have characterized it over the course of its development?
Well, so I think we will start with getting people access to their data quicker. I think the kind of process of, like, again, I've interviewed 200 people in the last 3 months. Most people still log into an affiliate network dashboard, copy and paste it into Excel. Like, there's still a bunch of inefficiencies that happen around there. Those are the problems we will fix first. Future projections, I don't think we do a good enough job at looking at the data we have to then try and make good programmatic forecasting about what will happen in the future. Mm. And programmatic forecasting what will happen in the future in certain scenarios. If I change this, what's my likely outcome? And then starting to build kind of programmatic suggestions about what you should do with that data. Mm. Again, I think there's a lot of us that have been doing this for a long time and can kind of, you know, look at a data set and decide what a program should do next. But I think there's whole swathes of people who engage with affiliate marketing that just don't know enough to make those decisions. Yeah. Whereas the data set sits there and we now have the technology to then surface a kind of series of suggestions. As to, like, if you're a VP of marketing or a founder CEO that has 90 minutes a week to spend on affiliate marketing, mm-hmm. like right now, there's the data set. You've almost got too much data for them to start making decisions about it. And that's before we get onto validations and TQs and like all of those silly problems that we still pay humans to sit in the middle lane of the motorway to fix. Like, those are very fixable problems, given the tool set that exists now and, you know, people that have been struggling with those problems for a while.
Well, I mean, as somebody without a driving license, I'm in favor of automation.
But I do think my kids probably won't have a driving license. I think it'll be illegal for them to drive by the time they hit.
It's
such a stupid thing. Like, the risks.
Well, this is the interesting, I guess, prospect of AI, is that it's almost inarguable what the benefits and advantages of bringing something like that to a very manual task that has high risk, obviously putting a human in a car and kind of driving it around at 60 miles an hour with lots of other humans in similar kind of metal cages on wheels, crazy. Like,
you can imagine
50 years time, it will look back on it as like...
Well, I think we'll look at it like drink. Can you imagine? Yeah. Our parents used to like go to the pub and drink, drive home.
Yeah.
I think we'll look at...
Well, we've probably both survived that as passengers. What I think is interesting, though, particularly around the AI thing, and it's a moral dilemma, I guess, that's come up with the self-driving cars, and that's stalled, pun slightly intended, over the last few years. I think in part because your threshold for the acceptability of risk there, for some reason, is so much lower with an AI taking responsibility for the driving of a car, for instance, as opposed to letting a human, because we're used to that behavior and there's a precedent there. And even though it's more risky to get into a car with a human in theory than it would be to get into a car driven by an AI, because it's out of our control, I think that there's a sensitivity there that people are just going to have to get their heads around, which is going to take time.
I think we probably, like, we used to have lift operators, right?
Yeah.
We would have conceived it as too risky to press the button on your own 50 years.
And I guess the same, it is an important analogy to make, because there are, whilst not the same maybe kind of existential threats when you jump into a car driven by an AI versus a human, but when you're talking about kind of like marketing budgets, when you're talking about marketing placements, brand safety issues, you know, all of this stuff suddenly being automated and you don't maybe have the same transparency or visibility around why those actions are being taken, you know, where those placements are being put, etc. There's going to be some anxieties there, I think, as well, that need to be overcome.
Yeah, I think definitely. But I think, you know, most of the other marketing stack, the rest of the marketing stack have kind of been, they've kind of been through this wave.
Yeah.
Like you've been able to do kind of bid to CPA on AdWords for a couple of decades, and they built pretty good guardrails in place. I think we'll probably just have to go through the same guardrail procedures.
Because there's lots of like conversations going on at the moment around the degree to which like Google have got Performance Max, obviously Facebook have Advantage Plus, I think it's called, and where they're kind of automating not just the actual placement of those ads, but even the creation of the creative that gets kind of, you upload a few kind of like examples of what your kind of display ad might look like, and it then starts to create variations on that that it feels are going to work best in the places that it kind of puts it. And you don't really have any real visibility around where those placements occur and where it's gone. You just basically get an aggregated view of like, your ROI on that campaign was X. And like, because the ROIs so far have been incredibly lucrative, I think, and, you know, marketing people are under a lot of pressure right now in the current context, I think a lot of people are like, yeah, that's great, I'm happy to take that. But I can certainly...
But is that not the whole ethos of affiliate marketing anyway? You set the CPA and I get to go away and kind of do what I want to do.
Yeah, I guess so, to a degree. I guess there's like, maybe there's a sense of, and it depends on how you run a program, the fact that you've got one-to-one kind of relationships in theory with those publishers themselves, and you have it is a kind of like a direct partnership rather than an abstracted kind of thing that's mediated by a platform through automation, etc. So I guess that's where the distinction lies right now, but there is a future where maybe that changes and evolves.
I think there's still no intrinsic technical link between the brand and what the user sees on the publisher side.
Mm.
Like, without that kind of dynamic, programmatic, like biddable, changeable link on the publisher side, again, I'd kind of like this to happen a bit quicker, but like the ability to dynamically target individual users with individual CPAs or creatives just doesn't exist in the affiliate world in the same way it does the rest of the online marketing stack. So I'd kind of wish this was a bigger problem than it's going to be over the next couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. I realize we're probably about 15 minutes into our conversation. I've not even asked you about affiliate AI yet. So can you tell us a bit about what the business is and what the initial kind of launch of the solution is and what it's helping?
Yeah, I'd love to. We are building tools for affiliate networks, for agencies and for brands on the back of kind of modern AI technology. And so our first product, which the waitlist is open for, is called Instant Assistant. And it effectively gives affiliate managers access to their current affiliate network data through natural language. Be able to go into Slack or Microsoft Teams and ask for, give me my sales in France for yesterday, include the EPC and compare it to every other Wednesday since the start of the year, or kind of whatever ad hoc data requests you kind of normally log into Tableau or to or to AWIN to find out.
So I guess
that'll be a market in a couple of weeks.
It's going back to that discussion point we had, I guess, around like the programming language of the future being English. Same goes for kind of data analytics, right?
So exactly.
rather than a sophisticated, complex Excel formula, you've got something that is, you know, you ask it and it feeds you back the information.
And I think that's one of the things that most excite me about this kind of AI world is the ability to kind of put relatively unstructured data into the system and get structured data out the other side. Whereas before you'd have to write kind of SQL queries or log in and kind of do very specific things, you can now interact with the same data set in a much more natural way.
Now, you mentioned obviously the solutions premised on natural language. It seems like there's a lot of terms being thrown around at the moment relating to different forms of AI. So could you just describe, I guess, what it is that you mean? Is it simply that it's kind of like conversational rather than it being something that's maybe a little bit more structured?
So natural language is kind of what you're seeing in GPT, the ability to go in and kind of ask it in your own natural language what you'd like to see. And if you've played with ChatGPT, the kind of better you are at asking questions, the better answers you'll get out the other side. Ours will be much the same. But the ability to kind of ask things in your own language, I do think sets off a flywheel that means people can do things much quicker.
Is that just a point of interest, really, I guess, around in your own language? Will the instant assistant, will it only be available in English to begin with?
If you think back to like Google Translate, which was, I don't know how long ago that was, 10 years ago, that was kind of the first, you know, generative natural language AI. Like, it's still the same. A lot of the technologies are built on the same infrastructure. So yeah, it'll be all languages.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. So you can start to understand, I guess, with something like this being launched, how it might change the role of an affiliate marketer, an account manager running a program for a brand through a network or an agency, for instance. Like, how radically different do you think the structure of an affiliate platform that was being built today, premised on AI, would be to one that was built, say, 20 years ago, and, you know, which a lot of the existing platforms currently are?
Yeah, good question. I think, for starters, the way you interact with that data will be fundamentally different. I think you'd probably build it with a kind of more fluid chat interface rather than drop down. I think you'd think about tracking and attribution and validation in a slightly different way, because you kind of have like last click kind of still makes sense in a bunch of the industry, but obviously, you know, we all know it doesn't in other areas. I think you probably start from the ground up on a bunch of those other things. And then like service packages is probably a good area to think about. I think brands still pay agencies and networks for like humans to do things. I think you'd kind of want to push more of that money into the strategic side and kind of just, you know, strip out the manual work and really double down on the tangible outcomes that are going to move the needle.
My next question was actually kind of related to that, which you've partly answered already, I guess, which is related to kind of how does it change the role of an affiliate marketer kind of tomorrow? And like you say, I think that there's less effort and time wasted on
doing dumb stuff that humans shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, versus kind of like doing more valuable, creative, strategic stuff. My kind of like the way that I'm thinking about it at the moment, this isn't just from an affiliate perspective, but also from a content creation perspective as well. And it's almost analogous to me to kind of like, you think about a professional kitchen and the introduction of the microwave or something that was suddenly going to speed up and accelerate kind of like the whole cooking process. And whilst professional kitchens would still have microwaves, and they have like a, there's a value there that you would hear from chefs. Actually, when you're creating something that's more handcrafted, maybe higher quality, etc., you are still going to need that manual input and that professional kind of expertise.
Yeah.
And so it's a like an accessory, and it's a tool rather than a replacement.
You become the editor, right? Like you still need that editing process to kind of maintain quality, but you don't need to do the stuff over and over again.
There's there's question marks around. I was listening to a podcast a couple of days ago where they were talking about like how valuable is some of that sort of busy work still for a grounding in understanding like an industry. And obviously there are elements that aren't important, and we've seen stuff be eradicated in the past through, like, you take an example like Excel. Like, I think the precursor to Excel was, you know, spreadsheet for piece of software was VisiCalc back in the 70s, and that upended the kind of accounting profession because all this kind of like very manual kind of like literally abacus on, you know, counting was suddenly...
That was your training ground.
That was your training ground. That actually, the profession of accountant didn't lose jobs necessarily, but it did change jobs. Yeah. And so accountants suddenly became much more strategic, I guess, rather than just bean counters, for want of a better word.
So. Yeah, I agree. I get kind of asked this question quite a lot. Yeah. Like, what's the downside of this technology? Yeah. And it's probably... the ability to kind of onboard a lot of people quickly. And what we used to do is kind of give them these repetitive validation type tasks, uploading creative, changing links, like all of that. It's still like a waste of, I know they're junior, but they're still like supercomputer, like walking supercomputers that were making do stupid things.
Yeah.
I still think that you just have to think about it slightly differently. Maybe they run smaller accounts, you set up the guardrails. Like, I think we just have to think about, I don't think we should be making people do dumb things, because it's a kind of a good way to onboard them.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think we kind of think about the problems.
Yeah, yeah. I spoke to Adam Ross, Avon CEO, prior to this interview, and I asked him, like, is there a question that you would want to put to Rob? And he said, to ask you this, actually. So he would say that there's like a certain dark art, for want of a better phrase, to brokering successful partnerships in the industry and even in influencer marketing. So the big question for him was about how AI can really grasp that nuance and deliver results. And I guess, how can it move from providing insight and recommendations to actually executing those actions in a way that's going to be of benefit to brands and make them feel confident about the validity of those actions?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. Probably two questions. One, I think it's about, for the foreseeable future, it'll be about bubbling up the best options to those kind of humans to then carry out the kind of relationship-based dark art stuff. I don't think, you know, so much of affiliate marketing still happens via kind of partnerships and relationships and kind of the intangibles. I don't see that changing anytime soon, especially when, you know, we don't have absolute power over what the user sees on the publisher side.
Mm.
The second part of like the actual output stuff, I think is another good question. I think we will have to concentrate on the things that are in control, like validations and TQs and things like that. Again, 10 days ago, OpenAI couldn't, it was still a copy and paste job to get anything that GPT-3 did. And in the last 24 hours, they've kind of broken out of that silo with plugins. And so I think if we can get the pipes in place, then we can start moving to the actual execution. With the right guardrail. Again, back to your kind of earlier questions of like, how do we put the guardrails up to make sure that this kind of flywheel doesn't go? And
Okay, final question, because we have run out of time, but looking to the future yourself, I mean, it's hard to know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone kind of like in a month's time or 3 months' time. But what currently are the plans for affiliate AI for the rest of the year?
So yeah, so we've kind of got a series of products that we'll launch over the next quarter or so, starting with Instant Affiliate, Instant Assistant, and moving through forecasting and suggestions, rolling out across a couple of networks and a few agencies. And then I think we'll come back to the table. Like, we need to, everything's moving so quickly. I think the most important thing is to truly understand what the problems are, and we'll be spending a lot of time with the client services teams around the affiliate industry to make sure we don't just kind of ship products that like look cool, But I think dialing into things that actually save people time mm-hmm. and actually result in kind of meaningful output.
Yeah.
And so we'll be spending a lot of time in that space.
Yeah.
And then eventually fixing TQs.
That'd be great. Thank you. Well, best of luck with it. If people want to find out more, how can they reach you and do so?
Look for us. We're all over LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Affiliate.ai for the website and the waitlist.
Brilliant. Thanks for coming in, Rob. Thanks so much to Rob for popping into the Awin office today to talk about affiliate AI and about the implications of AI more generally on the affiliate industry. I've no doubt we're going to see some rapid and exciting developments in this space in the coming months. I just hope by the time I come back from paternity leave in July that I haven't been replaced by some AI-powered avatar. Would you even be able to tell if I had? Maybe I have been already. Who knows? Anyway, let's park the paranoia for now. Before I sign off for the next couple of months, there are two things to note. The first is that if you're planning to attend Awin's UK conference, Think Tank, on May 25th here in London, then I'm also hoping to make it there. So do keep an eye out for me and feel free to say hello. It's always really nice to meet any of our listeners. And secondly, as ever, if you've listened this far and enjoy the Awin Talks podcast, then please do give us a rating or a review on Apple or Spotify. And if you've got any feedback or suggestions for future episodes, feel free to contact me on LinkedIn. I always welcome that input from our audience. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. And Awin Talks will be back next month, another episode. And I will be back in July. Goodbye.